San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio. We are live from La Vie. I'm your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to Riverside in the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He is an accomplished and best-selling author. He is a family office expert to several high-net-worth families, and he's a CPA extraordinaire. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. Great to be here. We survived Thanksgiving. It was a great event, the Oceanside Turkey Trot.
Yes, wonderful.
10,000 runners, over $100,000 raised for charity, and a lot of fun.
That was great. That was great.
But we don't have much time to talk about it tonight because we have a full house.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. But anyway, let's see. We're having some great weather here. Not such good weather other parts of the country. Chargers won a barn burner last week, right?
I didn't watch it.
Anyway, it's been some exciting games, and then hopefully they'll have a shot at the playoffs. Who knows? I've been up and down. I swore I would never watch another minute of them after Washington, and here I am watching again. But we've got a really great show tonight, and we have in studio one of our sponsors, Jason Kruger, and with Signature Analytics. So hello, Jason. Good to see you. And how about we get right into the show, Richard? We've got two wonderful guests.
Go ahead and introduce them, Joe. Let's get rolling, because, again, we got a full house.
Yes, we have a husband-wife team here. This is they're really an interesting couple and have really made it big in the world of entrepreneurship in terms of teaching it and living it and breathing it and writing books about it. And they both have a fascinating history. And they both have a column in the San Diego Union Tribune, if you hadn't noticed. And their names are Neil Centuria and Barbara Bree. So welcome to our show. Hello, Neil, and hello, Barbara.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joe and Richard.
Great to have you here.
Thanks for coming out.
Well, they've got a fascinating bio. I'd love to start with Neil, because he's got this Hollywood background, and and we talked a little bit before the show about how Hollywood drew you into another field of successful entrepreneurship. So
yeah, I'll tell you. So okay. I did spend, 10, 11 years, maybe 10 years in Hollywood writing sitcoms and screenplays. I had attended the American Film Institute. Mm-hmm. So if you get to figure you're about 1970, I don't know, 8 or 9. And what defined my change into, I moved from Hollywood to real estate, was the following. I had been writing at that time, there was something called Movies of the Week. Those are 90-minute movies. So I wrote one that was a comedy, and I bring it to the producer, and he says, it's hilarious. I fell off my chair. Unfortunately, I'm on the clock. I know, so I'm usually am.
60
so
minutes.
So that's all right, 60 minutes. So he said, but the production company is only buying dramas. I said, yeah. But he says, it's terrific. You should write it. I said, okay. So I go back. I get paid a little bit. I write a drama. He says, come back to see him. It's like three handkerchiefs, and the towel was wet. He says, unfortunately, the studio is only buying comedies. And this is a true story. I reached across the desk. I grabbed him by the collar, and I said, I'm out of here. And the defining moment for leaving Hollywood is I didn't want to beg anymore. And that leads to this whole theory about entrepreneurship, which is mostly people want to have some kind of control of their own life. And I was tired of sort of begging. And the beautiful thing about real estate, whether it's real estate or entrepreneurship or a coffee shop or a Jiffy Lube, it doesn't matter. You don't have to love me. You see, the building is $104,000. Great. Here's a check. Goodbye. Give me the deed. Give me the keys. You don't have to be loved. You didn't have to beg anybody. So Hollywood led me to a better career. And now I get to look back, and I actually think I was really funny, but they didn't buy as I thought they would.
But you had a successful career there, right?
You worked for MASH, right? I mean, yeah. Are you a screenwriter, I mean?
Yeah, but you have to understand, the way the Hollywood business works, let's be fair.
Yeah.
You write on spec. I was not a staff writer, so let's not overcase. I wrote on spec. Some shows got bought. Some shows got made. Some shows mostly didn't get made. Some shows get rewritten. Mm-hmm. You get used to, if you're a writer, which is, especially in the movie business, not like theater, your words are like the beginning. You write it, and then the guy says, great, here's $3,500, drop dead. Yeah. And then they rewrite it, and you don't even see your credit. It doesn't exist. It was supposed to be a movie about a blue person, it comes out yellow. Mm. Doesn't matter. Hollywood is the sort of like the Cuisinart of creativity.
Oh, Johnny was right. They do eat their young, don't they? The Cuisinart. But now, where were you born and raised, Neil, just out of curiosity? New York?
St. Louis. No, I did time in New York. Rikers Island, 2 years for bank fraud. I swore it wasn't my signature, but they didn't believe me.
Entrepreneurship. Okay. Anyway, and then Barbara, how about yourself? Where were you born?
I grew up in Philadelphia, and in the mid-70s decided that the future looked much brighter in California and came out here to work for the Sacramento Bee.
And then how did you turn?
Wow, the Sacramento Bee.
Yeah.
I used to read that all the time when I was...
Yeah, I was Bree at the Bee. People remembered me.
And then how did you two meet?
Well, I ended up... Neil is my second and last husband. Let's get
and
that
Barbara's my 11th and probably last wife.
Let's get that straight. And I met my first husband when I was at the Bee, and he was a real estate developer here in San Diego. And then I went to work for the LA Times. We got married. We had a child. We had a second child. We got divorced. The American way. I met Neil.
It's actually the American dream. That's a whole other matter.
Right. I got divorced in 1993. I met Neil about a year, 10 months later, and the rest is history.
So let me tell you how we met. You'll like this. So you know I wrote a book. It's called I'm There For You, Baby, The Entrepreneur's Guide to the Galaxy.
It Great book. I've read it.
You're very kind. It has 251 rules.
I even paid for it.
You don't have to. You know what, Mike? If people buy this and they're listening and they actually want to buy I'm There For You, Baby, you go to Amazon, you buy it. If you don't like it, you send it back to me and I'll give you back the $8.
Wow.
So there's 251 rules in the book about entrepreneurs, but there's only three that really are spectacular rules. The first three rules are the best rules in the book, and they are as follows. Number one, this is for success as an entrepreneur. One is return every email and every phone call. No matter how famous and powerful you are, you really got to return every email, every phone call. And the reason is you don't know what you don't know. It's you don't know who's on the other end of the line. Number two, networking is a profession, and you need to become a professional at it. And the third rule is the killer. Pay close attention, Joe and Richard. The third rule says you need to go. It's a little zenny, so hang with me. You need to go to all the events, in particular, the ones that you are sure are a total waste of time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's October 7th, 1993, and it's raining. And I have an office at the top of Symphony Tower, and I'm busy building some buildings. And I'm supposed to go to the Downtown Partnership Awards Worldwide something or other. And it said, I don't want to do it. I'm tired. I don't want to do it. But if you write the book, you have to actually.
But this was before he wrote the book.
I knew inside. So I go to this event, and there's Miss Bree. And by the way, the rule on events, especially in San Diego, if they say it's from 5:30 to 7 is the networking hour, you get there at 5:20. San Diego's like, in New York, 5:30, they haven't even opened the doors. In New York, you arrive at 6:15, you're early. In San Diego, you got to get there at 5:20. 5:20 for a 5:30 event, and there's already 30 people there. Get there. I'm a professional room worker. Second rule is about networking. So I get to the room, and there's Miss Bree, and I had met her through some Democratic politics, so I sort of knew her, and I came up to her, and I said, you know, I hear you're getting divorced. So am I. Now, here's the end of the story. At 6:20, they go in for dinner. I always pay. I never eat. Sometimes salad, but I'm out of there. You walk in, I walk out. So I walk out, it's still raining, I get the car, I drive home, and I realize that for those 45 minutes, I didn't look at anybody else. Now, if you're a professional room worker, you say, hello, Joe, and meantime, you're looking at Richard, you check with Jason, you got to go across, and every conversation is 90 seconds, 110 seconds, and you're out of there. You don't stay too long, because you only got 44 minutes to work the room. I'm driving home in the rain, and I say, for a guy that's a professional room worker, you didn't do a very good job, which that was the light bulb that said, I better call this woman back.
So, you got her card, right?
Right. Well, and it turned out we lived about a half mile away from each other, although I was living in a house that was about to go into foreclosure. At the time, I was working at Connect, which was then still a part of UCSD, and I was actually at this downtown event representing the university when I met Neil.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you how hard it was to get her. She had made a decision after getting divorced that she wanted to meet somebody within a half a mile of where she lived.
Okay.
And it's that, you know, I was a limited number, and she had to be Jewish. So when I won by default. It was like somebody else conceded the match. It's the Billie Jean King story you guys have, okay?
Yeah. I got one rule. Forget your card, always get theirs. That's my rule, right?
I like that.
Very good.
Right.
Because, you know, yours can wind up in the wash or someplace, but you've got theirs, so... Right, Neil? Does that make sense?
Correct.
Well, what's interesting is from Neil, from our meeting, Neil, you know, gave up real estate development and ended up in the world of technology, and that was because of me being at Connect.
Well, we've got to connect with a sponsor right now, so, but hold that thought. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life, live from La Vie. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, live from La Vie, with Neil Centuri and Barbara Bree, Richard Musio, myself, Jason Kruger in the studio. Hey, Neil's website is imthereforyoubaby.com. Check it out. His book's right there. He'll refund the money if you don't like the book. How about that for a guarantee? And where we leave off, Barbara, you're going to talk about your software company.
Well,
and
so Neil and I met on this rainy night in October 1993, and for those of you who were alive back in the early 90s, it was not a great time in the real estate development industry. And I joke that, in a sense, Neil was an out-of-work real estate developer.
What makes you think it's a joke?
It's not a joke. It was the truth. And I'm working at Connect, which is an incubator without walls for early-stage technology and life science companies. And Neil starts coming to all the Connect events. And Neil is a quick study.
Well,
and
he was looking to connect, obviously.
Yeah. And in the fall of 95, he comes up with the idea for the software company that we started called Atcom. And Atcom started out by doing, remember, this is fall of 95. People are starting to get the internet, starting to do email. Laptops are expensive and clunky. And our first product was kiosks, where you could get your email and surf the internet in a public place. And that morphed into software that allowed you to get high-speed internet access on your laptop in a hotel room or anywhere else.
But you've developed a lot of company, ProFlowers,
right,
and a lot of things.
Yeah, we sold Atcom in 1995, and it was Atcom because it was communications for wherever you're at.
That's right. I remember that company.
Yeah, and we had our ups and downs, and fortunately sold it, and made us and all of our investors happy. And we got married in 2000.
So where'd you have this grandiose idea? I mean, you were a screenwriter, and Barbara was working with us. Connect was, I guess you might have been the inspiration.
No, it was Neil's idea. Neil should tell you how the idea came.
So here's how it happens. Another rule is find one or two people you think you like and are interesting and intelligent and go to lunch with them every 2 weeks. So there's a character in town. His name is Jim Nicholas. Good friend of mine. I love him. And he and I would go to lunch at a Vietnamese restaurant in North Park. And every couple of weeks, we'd have Vietnamese food, and we'd see what crazy, stupid way could we lose more money than we've been losing before in some of our arrangements. On that particular day, Time Magazine had come out with an article about, cyber cafes, where you could get your email in a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And this is 95, this is September 95. And Jimmy and I were talking, and I say, you know, maybe. He says, and I say, look, I don't want to own a food place. I'm not interested in that. But you know what would be interesting? What if you could get your email like at an airport? He says, well, that's a really good idea. And that's a true story. We take a napkin. We say, well, okay. Now, it turns out that Mr. Nicholas owns a building across the street called the Egyptian. It was a 6 or 8 or 10 unit apartment house. I said, good, we'll make it in the shape of a pyramid. And so we began from that. That's how the ideas come. You don't invent necessarily something brand new. What you do as an entrepreneur is improve on, modify slightly, make better what already exists.
Now remember, this is 95 and Neil barely knows how to turn on a computer, but he's come up with a brilliant idea. Fortunately, because of my role at Connect, I knew all the great technical people in town.
Okay.
And that allowed us to build an amazing software team and start our company.
And we did have some geniuses at the company from software. A couple of really talented fellows.
Richard gets
But Neil, question. Yeah. But you were a real estate developer. You got into the high tech space. Did you make a clean break with real estate? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs, they stay stuck in things that aren't working because they don't want to change, you know, the industry or the business.
I was committed. We raised money from, our first raise was $1 million or $1.2 million from friends, family, fools. That's pretty standard, yep. Including Barbara's brother-in-law. Brother.
Brother.
My brother-in-law soon. That's been done. No, never raise money from your brother-in-law. That would be another rule. I should have put that in the book.
Well, fortunately, you made money for him.
He made a lot of money. He's still aggravated me. out of me. So, but I think you have to be committed. You can't have 1 foot in, 1 foot out. One of the classics when you're raising money is you go to the venture capitalist. You say, I've got a team, and they'll all come with me when you fund. You will not get funded. people, you have to jump the bridge. Mm-hmm. You have to cross the chasm. You have to commit before somebody will write you a check, because contingent commitment is no commitment.
Mm-hmm. I tell people you can't have one foot on the boat and one on the dock unless you want two pulled groin muscles.
But Richard, it gets back to your point about collaboration all the time, right? I mean,
well,
this
of course.
This was a perfect
That's
collaboration.
That's what Connect is all about. That's what Connect is all about. I mean,
so if you two never meet, none of this stuff happens, right? Mm-hmm. Neil's probably stuck writing screenplays, and Barbara's still at Connect looking for the next great opportunity. I don't know, right? I mean, who knows? But
so, Neil, when did you start writing on the book? I mean, how many years did that sort of foment in your mind?
I mean, well, you got to remember, I was actually a professional writer, so it was not as difficult as it might have sounded. Okay. Everybody always says they have a book in them. It's June of 2010, and we'd run a company into the ground. I've run eight. I'd say I'm batting 650, maybe seven. I got one grand slam, a double, two singles, a fielder's choice. You know, but we run one into the ground called SDNN, and we're not ashamed of it. We're willing to tell of the mistakes
we
made.
San Diego News Network. San Diego News Network. I remember that, yeah.
So I realized that I'll never work again, and she had taken all the sharp instruments out of the house by then. So I said, I'm going to become a consultant, because after all, I'm a consultant. I'm going to consult. I don't know that I had necessarily a consultant's personality, but I thought I could, and so I went to somebody who's an expert, and he said, look, if you want to be a consultant, you got to write a book. I said, not a problem. I'll take care of it. June of 2010, I start. And in September of 2010, I finish.
Wow.
And
fast.
So what happened along the way, though, was the following. I kept going out for getting auditioning to be a consultant. And what I realized is no one would hire me. So not only was I unemployed and I had a book that nobody would buy and I had no business. Here's the characteristic of a consultant that I didn't have and I accepted, because subsequently I've now run three other companies and two of them are quite successful. The consultant gets in the car. First of all, the consultant gets in the back seat. And then the driver starts to pull out, and the guy says, you know, just be careful. I want to remind you there's a bush on the side. Watch that car. And the driver drives, and that's a consultant. My personality was such, I got in the front seat, the guy turns the key, and I said, you're doing it all wrong. Give me the wheel. So I didn't have a consultant personality. I had a CEO personality, yeah, so I accepted
you're
it.
You're not a good backseat
driver. And subsequently, we started Oberon Fuels, we started One App, and we started DealStruck.
No, so and LonoCloud.
And LonoCloud, which we sold to Jason's mother's cousin sister's brother-in-law, the woman who wrote the checks to us from Viasat.
The alternative fuels, what is that mostly focusing on, algae?
Oberon's an interesting story. Oberon makes a particular fuel called dimethyl ether, known as DME. It's a diesel replacement. Mm. And like all things, I mean, this entrepreneur game has as much to do about luck and sort of being at the right place at the right time. I won't know if everybody does, but I would recommend to people they read a book. They read an author called Dan Kahneman.
Oh, sure.
K-A-H-N-E-M-A. Dan Kahneman won the Nobel Prize in 2002 in economics. He's world famous, and he's written a book recently called Thinking, Fast and Slow. But he's famous for a book called Choices, Values, and Frames. And Kahneman is the guru for rational man behavior. He is the... But what he says, among many things, is the following. He says, luck is like a sine curve, okay? It's not random. It comes through like a train coming through the station. Comes through all the time. You don't know exactly when the train is coming, but you need to be standing on the platform, because when the train comes through, you want to get on it. And that's really an interesting principle. It's not, luck is not random. It's actually a force in the universe, mm-hmm. and you can optimize to it if you're standing on the platform. What Kahneman says, stay on the field. You know, you're not in the starting nine, you're in the bench, even if you're sitting in the stadium. What you can't be is outside in the parking lot. You got to be in the stadium, somehow around, and it shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a little zenny, but I'm living proof that it actually, because if I ever told you the story about Oberon, we met a guy, every entrepreneur has a story. It's never straight. It's never linear. It's like a curlicue.
Well, that's how this radio show started, Joe.
That's
we were
right.
just sort of hanging around on the field.
Quite some field.
Well, it's a long story, but we can get into it sometime. But what was I going to say? Well, Robert Evans, the famous Hollywood producer, said success is where preparation meets opportunity. So that kind of dovetails with what you're saying. You do have to kind of be somewhere in the universe close to your goal, which you may not even know what it is or whatever, right?
Evans is famous. Of course, he was the producer of Chinatown, mm-hmm. and he wrote a book called The Kid Never Leaves the Picture.
The Kid Stays in the Picture. Well, we're going to stay in the picture right after this break. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life live from La Vie after our long break. Hang on. All right, we're back with more of Richard Money in Your Life, live from La Vie, and over to Richard to thank our sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. That includes Lovely La Vie, Cafe La Rousse, soon to open, Retold Holidays. They didn't tell us of which year. Just kidding. We mean in December.
Up. It's coming up
real soon. Michael Carantra and Drew Freitas with UBS. Couldn't do it without you guys. Thank you very much at UBS. Right across the street from UBS in downtown La Jolla on Prospect Street, San Diego's best business bank. That would be Regents Bank with Steve Sefton and Sean Puckett. Our newest sponsor, she was on last week, Brenda Geiger with the Law Offices of Brenda Geiger, helping with estate planning as well as asset protection. Carl Sheeler and his new company, Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners improve the value of their businesses while reducing their risk. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito CPA and Don Epic CPA with Polito Epic CPAs up in Vista. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. And sitting in studio with us, who's going to ask a question here after Joe tells us where to find sponsors, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, San Diego's best CFO and backroom outsourced accounting company. So thank you to all of our sponsors. And Joe, how can our listeners learn more about our wonderful sponsors?
All they have to do is get on their computer or smartphone or whatever they're using, get on iymoney.com, click on sponsors. All of their personal information is there, their bios and their contact info, everything you need to know. And Richard's been working with all of them for many years with very successful outcomes. Correct, Richard?
That is correct. We got a question coming from the floor from Mr. Jason Kruger.
Jason. Neil, you had mentioned earlier about the leap of faith that the entrepreneurs need to take, and obviously I did that. I did that myself. You've done that in the past. I'm interested in knowing, why do entrepreneurs do what they do?
Oh, thanks, Jason. This is one of my favorites. It's a rule in the book, and here's my theory, and I'm going to give you the theory, give you the rule, and then I'll give you sort of the backup for it, which is that entrepreneurs don't do this sort of thing for fame, nor do they do it for fortune. They do it for revenge. And the corollary to that is, you know, your mother said you were going to be worthless. You didn't do well in school. Your music teacher gave you a C. I mean, the idea of Zuckerberg and Facebook, let's analyze it.
My mom was right.
Right. Yeah, Zuckerberg is sitting there. He doesn't want, he can't get laid. She won't sleep with him. And so he starts Facebook. He showed her. I mean, you know, that's pretty, that was the reason. He said, you remember the first scene in the movie. So what's interesting is this is not a particularly original thought, the idea of revenge or the idea of overcoming deficiencies. So Malcolm Gladwell, who's a famous writer, writes for The New Yorker, among other things, has recently written a book called David and Goliath. And his premise is that the David character, because he can't compete at the same level as Goliath, he's impaired, he finds a different solution. He finds the slingshot. And so if you went back to my career in the real estate business, at the time I did it, I didn't have very much money, so I couldn't compete with the REITs. I couldn't compete with people, because if the building is $100,000 and somebody actually has $100,000, you know, there's no big deal. You write a check. I had like $11, and I said, I'll give you 10, then I'll give you a note, I'll spin it around, I'll get approvals, I'll reverse it, and maybe we'll get out of this mess. So the deficiencies lead to innovation and interesting and creative solutions. Mostly people do it to show their mother that they're not the total piece.
You know, I'd like to give you a different point of view, and maybe, you know, this comes from a woman. You know, I often say I didn't become an entrepreneur until I was in my 40s. Neil was basically entrepreneur.
You're just barely in your 40s now. That's
right.
What you told me.
That was
last month, right, Barbara? Anyway.
Barbara, your book is A Change of Life Entrepreneur. I think that's a book there.
Yeah. So I say I did it because I wanted to take control of my life and be in control of it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of our favorite lines is entrepreneurs, you know, everybody has to take control of their life, whether it's in their own business, a nonprofit, or government. You can't count on, you know, having the same career for 20 years, retiring with a pension from General Motors or the city of San Diego.
So, Neil, interesting point, though. I was reading yesterday the National Education Association monthly magazine. I have a really exciting life, as you can tell. And there was an article in there about college students coming out, particularly business students. And no business student anymore wants to be, for example, an employee. You know, the old-fashioned way, you join a great company, rise up through the ranks, get a great retirement. Now they all want to be entrepreneurs. Basically, all these students want to be entrepreneurs, and they all think that they're capable of being the number one guy or woman in a company. And maybe a lot of them are number twos or threes or fours. What do you say to that?
I think you're right statistically. The increase in courses in entrepreneurship in the colleges is astronomical. Every college today has some kind of either a major, a minor, or a series of courses in entrepreneurship. It's a subtle distinction you've made. Often the person who starts the company thinks for a moment he or she is the CEO. They usually aren't. If you took the statistics, if a venture capitalist funds your company, I think 40% of the time within 18 months they will replace the CEO. So you can be the founder, you can own most of the stock, but it's really hard to be both the founder and the CEO and take it the distance. So one of the things I know about myself is I'm really good from like 0 to 7 million or 10 million or in other words, 0 to 50 employees. After that, I'm not the right guy. I either have to sell the company, bring in another CEO. It's very few. Bill Gates is one of the, you know, there's one in 100,000
who like
can
name,
both be.
I'll name another one, Irwin Jacobs.
Irwin is extraordinary.
But they're so special and so unique that statistically they are outliers. Mm-hmm. That mostly everybody wants, I guess they want to start their own company because they want to have control of their lives the way Barbara talks. And then they need to be really self-aware of what skills they actually have.
Right, but Richard's also said something very interesting. You know, if everybody wants to start a company, where are the worker bees to be? And not everybody should start a company. And sometimes it's really good to go work for a larger organization first and get some experience. I mean, not every 22-year-old is Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates.
Right.
I'm going to argue that you should not found the company alone. You should always have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of statistics, again, on partnerships. And if you looked at the top companies, lots of them, had two people co-founders. The obvious one, of course, easy being Apple, which is Jobs and Wozniak. So I like that.
And find a good mentor, right? I mean,
Find a mentor, but be, you know, my rule for CEOs, you have to have at least 2 years of psychotherapy. Because because it's not just, everybody thinks, it's like riding a bike. Everybody can sort of ride a bike, and then there's Lance Armstrong, but prior. I mean, meaning there's world-class riders. There's really, it's a skill. So often you can get just as rich being the number two or three guy as being the CEO, and you may not be the right guy to get across the chasm.
Because I think a lot of the skills or traits that are inherent in entrepreneurs, I think you're born with. It's like being able to run fast. Either you can run fast or you can't. Now, everybody can run faster than they know how to run if they practice, but I think some of that is just genetic. That's at least been my experience.
But don't you need certain personality traits? I mean, if you're an introvert or cannot converse well with people, but you're a genius in engineering or something, I mean, you need, I mean, Neil, you come on like a, you know.
You need Neil as your partner then.
Right. You're not one of our most calmest guests. Right. That's what Joe's trying to say nicely. I'll just say it bluntly.
I took my meds this morning. Are you kidding me?
People ask me why I got 12 different things going on at once. I said it's a lot. You know, it's a business decision. It's a lot cheaper than being on medication for ADD.
But I mean, if I've got a new cure for cancer and I'm just a very laid back, I mean, you need someone also to deliver the message in a powerful way. Also, when it counts to the people who are funding or whomever, right?
Absolutely,
I think that's true. Yeah,
but Neil, question your book. I'm there for you, baby. That must have come from a conversation where somebody actually said that to you. Is that?
Of course, that's a phrase. That's a famous phrase in Hollywood.
Okay.
So one of the phrases, of course, is the check is in the mail.
Uh-huh. Okay. Oh, I see.
The other phrase you can't repeat. And the third one is, let's do lunch.
Okay.
So there's this kind of,
and then
I hated about Hollywood was this incredible and very, very obvious superficiality, which is, absolutely, Neil, I'm there for you. You're never going to hear from him again. The card he gives you is unlisted. The email has erased. He doesn't even live in the same city. So it was sort of, and if you look at the cover, somebody said, gee, that's a really interesting cover. Was that by mistake? I said, no, it's by design. And it's a bit of barbed wire. Right. And the idea is, the real premise, that I'm being serious for a minute, the premise behind the book was, no one ever really tells the truth. And I tried hard in the book to tell the truth. So I told the truth in a way that reveals sort of the dark sentences and some good fortune and some misfortune. Because normally if you go to a panel, you hear Joe Blotz in the panel, he says, look, I had a great idea, I raised a little money, I made $100 million. And he says, nobody wants to hear about you. Don't tell me how famous and good and smart you are. Tell me the mistakes you made. Mm-hmm. From that, I can learn something.
So I say when you get burned enough times, Neil, then start your own fire. But anyway, we'll come right back with our last segment right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with the last segment, It's Your Money, Your Life. Hey, get Neil Centuria and Barbara Bree's book, I'm There for Your Baby, at imthereforyourbaby.com. He'll refund the money for you if you don't like it. And their column appears every Monday in the San Diego Union Tribune. So, Richard, where are we going at the tail end of this?
Okay, one thing I'd love to talk about, Neil and Barbara, is the importance of business leaders becoming leaders in their communities and giving back philanthropically and doing things to make their community better on the premise that, writing checks to charities is a good thing, but successful owners or experienced owners of companies can offer their network, their time, their talents, all the things they've learned to basically make community causes leverageable or scalable, whereas money only buys X amount of goods and services. What are you guys doing in the community, and what are your thoughts about that comment?
Well, I love that you brought that up, because honestly, I spend most of my life focused on community engagement at this point. And first of all, my passion has been leveling the playing field for women in business, healthcare, and politics.
You're here.
So I did start an organization called Athena San Diego. I started it almost 20 years ago, and it's become the largest professional organization for executive women in the tech and life sciences sector here, with over 500 members and support from, you know, every big company, Qualcomm, Pfizer, SAIC.
Can we give that website, athenasd.org?
Athenasd.org. Yeah. I'm very proud of what Athena has become. I've also been on the board of Planned Parenthood. It's one of our major causes. And I'm very engaged in the Jewish community. I'm on the board. I'm vice chair of the board of the Jewish Community Foundation, where people set up donor advised funds. And Irwin Jacobs and Andrew Viterbi, the co-founders of Qualcomm, for example, their families, they run their philanthropy through the Jewish Community Foundation. And we are actually the largest grant maker in San Diego County. Our donors gave away $98 million in the year ending June 30. Which makes us the largest grant maker in the county. And I'm very proud of being vice chair of the board.
And I think the other way that Barbara and I both contribute, and I believe in this community give back, is as mentors. There's just a wealth of young people in San Diego, young and old, who have a grand passion to take control of their lives and create some kind of company, product, feature. And you spend a lot of time going to this incubator, that pitch fest. Takes time. You need to do it in a caring and meaningful way, and I think Barbara excels at that.
And we teach entrepreneurship at UC San Diego every fall quarter, and two-thirds of our students are UCSD students, mostly getting PhDs, and a third come from the community, mostly engineers from Qualcomm, Nokia, Sony, Hewlett-Packard, Viasat. Actually, one of our students.
So if someone wants to take your class, they just would go on their catalog and look for your
names? Yeah, it's actually never in the catalog for various reasons, but we start promoting it in July every year. It generally is oversubscribed.
Okay.
But we love doing it.
Barbara, I know you're associated with Run Women Run, too.
Yes.
Tell us briefly about that, because I've been to a couple of meetings. It's a great place to go if you want to meet. I'm just kidding.
But. No, it is Athena and Run Women Run. So that's about leveling the playing field for women in politics. So if we look around, we see that women, you know, are not 50-50 in Congress, in our state legislature. And with the recent government crisis over the federal government shutdown and whether we were going to, you know, not pay our debts, it was actually the women on both sides of the aisle, the Democratic and Republican women in Congress, who came together and got the men to think straight. So I believe we need more women in government. We will have better decision-making, better outcomes for everyone. And Run Women Run is a local membership organization, and we support and endorse women who are running for local office.
I think Sarah Boot's one of your
yes.
Kind of
we are supporting Sarah Boot. She is running for San Diego City Council District 2. We're supporting Carol Kim, who's running for San Diego City Council District 6. We're supporting a number of candidates. They're all on our website, runwomenrun.org.
Wonderful.
And we are nonpartisan.
Wonderful. That's great. Well, gosh.
So, Neil, question for you. You've got a lot of energy. What do you see yourself doing 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Because I don't see you ever slowing down.
Well, actually, I'm the CEO of the alternative fuel company called Oberon, and I will finish that. I'll probably replace myself within a year. I don't think I'll CEO again. So the thing that interests me is seed funding. Finding young people with one good idea. I have a partner. I think you know Cliff Borough.
Correct.
Oh, sure.
Cliff runs the team group and team services. And together with his partner, Tom Broadhead, the three of us have sort of ginned up a small fund, $11. I put in $9.50. They each put in 75 cents. And we are in the business of looking for and funding early stage companies, but with a particular focus on the quality of the of the founder. So at the end of the day, what a venture capitalist will tell you is he bets on the jockey, not the horse. I mean, you want to have a good idea, you want a big market, but at the end of the day, what you're betting on is that this person, man or woman, when the flood comes, will have boots. When he tries to go across the river, will have a canoe, because it won't be easy. It's not going to be a walk in the park, and you're looking for those qualities that you can bet on over a longer period of time. So we're big into caring deeply about the person, less about, you know, the idea is important, but we bet on people.
You're going to do that here locally, or are you expanding the...
We do it locally, only locally. I'm not big enough to can get it right in San Diego, let alone in Ohio.
Neil and Barbara, what do you think of those personality tests? I mean, if you're looking for certain traits, do you test these people, or is there just gut instinct, or is there something through the years that you say, hey, he or she has it? What do you think?
There's a guy on our team whose name is Giles Raymond, and we use him. He's a PhD organizational psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
So we do some testing. But I'll tell you the truth is, you can tell if you're really, really focused on the characteristics, if you've done it enough, I think you can make a pretty good bet.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a bet that you're going to be able to work with the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes things don't work out for whatever reason. The technology doesn't work. Someone else does it better. You know, there's so many risks out there.
Mm-hmm. So is he or she coachable? That's a big thing.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah.
There was a meeting this morning. It will go unnamed. And the guy who was pitching, Cliff, comes out and says to me, he simply talked too much. He just constantly talked. And so you can't, it's like getting married. If you don't pick up your underwear, you can't change that person. You just have to walk around it. So you have to accept he's not somebody we can back, because he didn't listen. So this issue of listening... Not that I did such a great job this afternoon, this evening. The listening is really critical. And listening for, you know, what is it? Not that what they said, but what didn't they say? It's the spaces between the lines that you're listening for.
Mm. Neil, the guests are supposed to speak, so you don't have to apologize for not, you know, you're not supposed to interview us, in case you're wondering how this radio thing goes. But anyway.
We're there for you, baby.
Don't worry about it. We're there for you, Neil. Don't worry.
Anyway, so where should we leave this?
And Barbara, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years?
Well, we're hoping to start Run Women Run chapters in other communities.
Oh,
and the first one will be in Riverside, and they will be doing their first event in March. But our goal is to make it into a statewide organization with chapters all over California.
And you've got an event coming up that is honoring one of my all-time favorite people, Patsy Mink.
Yes, we're
talk
going,
about that briefly, because well, she's in my book.
Yeah, we'll oh, really? About, well, it's actually not going to be till May, but
okay.
We will be doing a screening of a documentary about Patsy Mink, who was the first Asian-American woman elected to Congress and then to the U.S. Senate, and is the author of Title IX, which
what
is why
was,
women
What year
get,
was that?
Title IX was 72.
No, what year did she get elected to Congress?
You know, it was in the 70s.
In the 70s.
So okay. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But in January and February, Run Women Run, we'll be having other meetings to endorse other local women candidates.
Well, we'll keep an eye on you. We'll keep reading your column. Get the book, I'mThereForYouBaby.com. Richard, so great to see you. Jason Kruger, thanks for being with us tonight. Hey, thanks to Justin Hart, our sound engineer, for making us sound good. Thanks to Craig Blank, your account executive, and our programming genius, Dave Sniff. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life. Good night.